Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love him.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy. That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man.
I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to give nobody a second chance.
Trump. To represent that as some sort of subterfuge by John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate him.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald-faced truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
Big guest today, Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network analyst, will be with us. He's an actor. He's a director. He's an author. He's got a lot to offer. He's a pretty rich guy. And I gotta admit, the first time I met Yogi Roth, I thought, man, is this guy a little phony? Because he's just a little too smiley, a little too... And then, after a few minutes of talking to him, I was like, nah, he's just a nice guy. He's got a lot of stories to tell. He's been on a lot of journeys. He's been on a vision quest, so to speak. Loudon Swain fans will recognize that. And Yogi Roth will be with us to talk all things Pac-12. I'm going to ask him about the challenges that the Ducks and the Beavers face in college football. If you're an Oregon fan, with Willie Taggart on your mind, with the recruiting classes that Oregon has put together in the last couple of years, wondering what Willie Taggart will get out of Mark Helfrich's players, wondering what a coaching transition can do to the bottom line, even though you may be bullish on Willie Taggart, even though you may think a bowl game is certainly in the Ducks' horizon, we're going to talk to Yogi Roth about his vision quest, being an author, being a documentarian, being an actor and director, being a Pac-12 network analyst. But I'm going to ask him, too, about the hangover after a coaching change. What can you expect at Oregon? And then what does the rest of the conference look like? Because Oregon State is in this uphill climb that they seem to have some traction on. Gary Anderson was on the show yesterday when the irregular guys in the afternoons here on 102.9 and 750 The Game. And Gary Anderson gave a great interview yesterday talking about his challenges and, you know, refusing to lower the bar for his program. And I love that. But Yogi Roth, I'll have him kind of frame that against the rest of this conference. Like, do we know what's going on with Washington State and Washington and UCLA and maybe some of the programs you kind of forget about, you know, and the ones that you kind of maybe forget about as a college football fan, it's like Cal, Washington State, Arizona, Arizona State. I'll have Yogi Roth kind of give us the lay of the land. If you're going to pick a sleeper in the Pac-12 in college football this next season, who's it going to be? We'll talk to Yogi Roth at 12:30. That's just, 20 minutes away from now. So make an appointment and tell your college football fans to get here. Also on the show today, Scott Barnes, the Oregon State Athletic Director. Round of applause here from me to the city of Portland, to the Moda Center, to the Oregon Sports Authority, to Oregon State as well, because Oregon State put the bid together. They will host the first and second round NCAA tournament games. That's the big news. They're coming to Moda Center March 17th and 19th of 2022. Where are you going to be, Gliss?
I might be at the games. And I'm looking at the most recent update of this. They're actually going to be, in total, they're going to host five postseason events from 2019 to 2022. They're going to host regionals in 2019 for the women's side as well.
Nice. So they got the women's NCAA tournament. That's a regional, so that's a big one. And then they've got the first and second round games in the men's tournament. So 2019 we can get to. They're going to whet our appetite. We'll get to see some women's basketball. And for Oregon State, like, I think part of this is rooted in the fact that, you know, we've seen this in college basketball. Having a little bit of a home court advantage in a regional setting is a big deal. Kansas had it. They were in Kansas City. Didn't work for them. But South Carolina enjoyed a home court advantage in the NCAA tournament this year. It helped them. I think nobody would argue against that. So the fact that, you know, Scott Barnes, maybe as the athletic director at Oregon State, he's doing a little bit there to position Oregon State for some success. They want to host the first and second round games in 2022, 2019, the women's regional. I would also like to see the Oregon State team participate in the tournament. And so I'm going to ask Scott Barnes about that. What can he do as the athletic director to help the Beavers get to the tournament, not just be the host of the tournament? Because like in Sacramento, Sacramento State was the host of the tournament. And that meant that all their staffers were running around as the Ducks were playing and other colleges were playing in the NCAA tournament. They were not participating. I would like to see Oregon State do more than just host this event. I'd like to see him in it. Scott Barnes will be with us. We'll talk about his first month on the job. We'll talk about what he's doing in football to support Gary Anderson, what he's doing in men's and women's basketball, the good story that Oregon State baseball is. And really, because Barnes, people don't know this, or maybe you do. Raise your hand if you knew this. Scott Barnes was the chair of the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee. So he's a basketball guy. And while he is the AD at Oregon State, certainly football has to drive the bus. The Beaver AD coming on the show, that's kind of a big deal for him to come on and talk about it, take a victory lap, and talk about the State of the Union for Oregon State. So if you're a Beaver fan, 2 o'clock, make an appointment, be here. We start every show, though, the same way. It's like this. First of my three random things relates to Paul George, who is either a great motivator or a total idiot. Maybe he's tone deaf when it comes to motivating his teammates. He was outspoken again in talking about his teammates and talking about what they're not doing. Tell me how this act is going to fly in the Indiana Pacers locker room. As Paul George, obviously frustrated with how things are going, decides that he's going to be player coach. Talking about one of his teammates, Miles Turner, here.
We just need him to challenge Tristan. He'll keep him off the boards. You know, he's got to make himself available down low in the post. He's got to know at this point we need him to take it to the next level. You know, we'll continue to work with him.
That's Coach Paul George talking about his teammate. Also, Paul George talking about, hey, we got to do a better job with the pick and roll.
We had the answers. We'd probably be up in the series right now. You know, it's I'm trying to figure it out. We're trying to figure it out. They're killing us on it. Whatever it is, whatever we got to do, we got to try to figure it out at home. But they're definitely killing us on a 1-3 pick and roll.
Cleveland beat Indiana 117-102. The Pacers are down 0-2. I like how people always say they're down 2-0. Are they down 2-0 or are they down 0-2? Gliss?
0-2 sounds more accurate if you're the losing team.
From a anchor perspective, Curtis Rogers?
Yeah, they're down 0-2.
They're down 0-2.
Yeah.
They're not down 2-0.
No. They're down 0-2.
Because if we were playing like air hockey and I had a 2-0 lead on you, you wouldn't say I'm down 2-0.
Right.
Or you could say I'm down 2-0.
You could say that.
But you wouldn't say I'm down.
I think in the context of a series,
yeah,
you're down 0-2.
You're down 0-2.
Yeah.
Okay, there it is. So they're down 0-2, but I don't. It's not like they're getting whacked. They lost by 6 in game 2, 117-111. Paul George, though, continued speaking about his teammates, talking about Lance Stephenson here.
In our locker room, he's looked upon as a leader, one of our leaders. So his body language has to improve just for the team. We all know it. Lance is an emotional guy, and you know, a lot of it is just his heart and his competitiveness. You know, that emotion comes out on. He's just got to, you know, channel that, put it towards making effort plays on the court and doing whatever he needs for us to succeed.
Look, he's the best player on the team, Paul George is. And, you know, Lance Stephenson was visibly upset and is an emotional player. He threw a fit in the third quarter. Kevin Love was dominating him, and he threw a fit in his frustration. He's throwing his arms. He's yelling. Paul George, I think he's trying to be a good teammate by talking about the ways that Lance Stephenson needs to control himself. But this was, you know, keep in mind, before the playoffs started, Lance Stephenson announced that the fun time was over. Remember, he blew in LeBron's ear. He hasn't done that yet. He's had emotional outbursts at different points. But this is the second game in a row where Paul George is criticizing a teammate. Is it poor form doing what Paul George is doing? Or is this a case of a guy who is being a leader and saying, we all need to be better? He also talked about the bad defense.
Both games, game one and game two, they come down, they're shooting with no one in front of them off of a kick ahead. You know, we're just doing a terrible job of getting back and guarding people. We know how good LeBron's going to be. We know how good Kyrie's going to be. You know, the other guys, we got to be able to limit catching shoots, especially when they're coming off of just them advancing the ball up. You know, we're doing a poor effort on that.
Yeah, I think he crosses into poor form just because it's not like he's angry. This is an outburst. But I kind of feel like this is the head coach's position. Like, you know, there's a time and a place for all this stuff, and maybe he's saying it in the locker room too. But to come out publicly and talk about other teammates like this, I just don't know that it's going to help bring together an Indiana team that now must head home and try to win a game or two in this series against Cleveland. That's the first of my three random things. My second, you heard it in the update, Curtis Rogers had it. Jordan Bell turning pro. And this was a guy who was a difference maker for Oregon. I felt like he was their most valuable player through the NCAA tournament. And I felt like as he left the court at the Final Four, I was standing in the hallway, in the tunnel. And you can get on him for failing to block out. But I think part of the reason why he didn't block out on the free throws is I think that he got beat up throughout that game by Kennedy Meeks, who's a bigger player, a more physical player. And I think Jordan Bell, who just had left it all out on the court and took the blame for the loss afterward, he came through that tunnel. He was crying. I mean, he was crying, like not holding back. You're just sobbing as he came through the tunnel.
I really just boxed out. I had two opportunities to do it. I lost the game because of it.
That was him in the locker room saying, we lost the game because I didn't block out. Look, you lost the game because Dylan Brooks couldn't make a shot. You lost the game because at the end of the game, nobody could make a shot. And you lost the game because North Carolina dominated the offensive glass. And that's not all on Jordan Bell. I'm not surprised that he's turned pro. We talked about it yesterday. When you heard the whisper out of the Vertical that he was going to hire an agent, going to turn pro, it told me that the Vertical was talking to agents already who are saying, hey, Jordan Bell's shopping for an agent, or he's agreed to hire me as his agent. You don't just put that out there if you're the Vertical. And Jordan Bell, special player. I'm sorry to see him go. I think him coming back to Oregon would have been a big deal for Oregon. But I get it. He's at least the 35th best player in this draft. At least. And I do think he'll end up at the bottom of the second round after people get a chance to see him up close at workouts and after people talk with him, because I think he is a very charismatic player. He is I call him jumpy. He's a great leaper, great jumper. He has great recovery on his jumps. And I think as a rebounder, he knows how to play. And I think that at the next level, he's going to be able to rebound in the NBA. And I think you see a lot of players, like the Blazers have probably two players that remind me a lot of Jordan Bell. And you tell me, Gliss, if you are the Blazers and you know you have a backcourt in Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum that cannot guard anybody, don't you need a player like Jordan Bell, and I'm not saying a starter, but a guy like that on your bench who could play some four at the next level and be a rim protector? Wouldn't he be the kind of help defender that would make Portland better?
Absolutely. I think if you're the Blazers, I mean, that's exactly the kind of player you're looking for in the draft. You already kind of got your center. That's where they need to fill the gap.
I think their last pick in that first round, Cleveland's pick, that pick to me feels like a place where Jordan Bell would make sense. And so if you're a Blazer fan, keep an eye on that. And remember, I said that when it happened, so I can get some credit for that. All right. Also, I want to talk a little bit about, as my third random thing, United Airlines. They've had a bad week, bad couple of weeks. It's been a bad run. And you know what? It's kind of been their fault. If you are somebody who is a fan of United Airlines and a fan of, you know, hey, people make mistakes, that's one thing. But, you know, they had the passenger that they pulled off the flight.
Oh my God.
Yeah, what are you doing, United? You pull David Dow off that flight. Then you come out afterwards, the CEO, we all know the comments that he made afterwards about how, you know, this is a necessary part of things. And he apologizes for that. I don't know if you noticed yesterday, but United Airlines yesterday at the close of the stock market came out and announced that they had beat the street on their earnings estimates. They had a favorable quarter when it came to the estimates versus what they actually did business-wise. But I don't know if you've seen their stock today. They are in an absolute free fall today. The stock is down 4% despite the strong numbers, despite a strong quarter. And it's largely based on the fact that people are looking at this upcoming quarter and going, United is going to pay. And I think part of the reason is social media, the fact that there's a video of this out there that's not going away, the fact that every time that I play this clip...
Oh my God, what are you doing?
Every time I play that clip, Curtis Rogers sits up and shakes his head and smiles. Why do you do that?
It's just, I don't, man, that clip gets me every time.
And Gliss is down there. He's smiling and laughing too. Why? Every time I play that.
It's the lady that cracks me up.
Her play-by-play, what are you doing?
Makes it work.
She does make the video go. Like, without her, it's just a guy screaming. Could be anybody. Anyway, people are saying that United stock is taking a beating today. So there you have it. They're down more than 4% and after good earnings and positive news yesterday. Yesterday after market, people said United stock was going to be up. And I said, I'm not so sure. There it is. Those are your three random things, which brings us to a thought about what today is. It is April the 18th, 2017. But really, what is it?
Anybody know what today is?
What you talking about, Willis?
Take a shot. Take a stare. What is it? What happened? What does it mean? Tell us what today is. 503-417-7575.
Well, today's a lot of things. It's Tuesday. Tuesday, April 18th, as I mentioned. It's Nate Archibald's 69th birthday. How about that one? Also, other birthdays on this day. I'm looking for somebody who's famous. How about, does it ring a bell? Boy, not a great crew today. Like, you know, normally you have some names that jump up. Steve Lombardi, American wrestler, ring a bell? Anybody? Wilbur Marshall. How about Wilbur Marshall, NFL linebacker with the New York Jets once upon a time? That rings a bell with me, but it won't with you guys.
Yeah, that's maybe before my time. Yeah.
Little before your time. All right, let's go even further. Into tell me when I get to somebody. Derek Brooks, NFL linebacker.
Oh, yeah. With the Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
All right. His birthday today. Also, about Miguel Cabrera, Venezuelan baseball player.
There you go. Last Triple Crown winner.
There you go. There it is. There's your birthdays. But really, today to me is an important day in this city because when I got here to Portland, people said NCAA tournament events won't happen here. There are not enough hotels. An NBA All-Star game won't happen here. Not enough hotels. And I've watched the city. And I've watched the Bureau that is in charge of building hotels, sort of fumble around with this convention center hotel idea. I've watched the Moda Center change names. I've watched us get an event, an NCAA tournament event, which I thought was as good as any. But I've had to get on planes and fly around the country to places like Sacramento and places like Salt Lake City to see regional basketball tournaments and first and second round games. Spokane, for crying out loud. They've had more games than we have here in Portland. So I think today is an encouraging day as Oregon State and the Moda Center put together this bid to have women's NCAA tournament games, men's NCAA tournament games, a lot of first and second round, a regional in the women's case, and potentially on the horizon, how about an NBA All-Star game at Moda Center? That do anything for you? We're a big enough city. We're a big enough market. We're a big enough place. Forget what Portlandia tries to tell you about. We're not hokey. Forget what Voodoo Donuts tries to make this city about. You're not all weird. This is a good sports city with a lot of passion in it. We deserve events like that. And to me, that's what today's about. Leave it here. Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network analyst, actor, director, author. He's next.
This is the BFT with John Canzano on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
It's our radio brought to you by First Call Heating and Cooling. Make them your first call for heating and cooling. I don't know what your need is in your house, but I can tell you First Call Heating and Cooling can take care of it. And if you haven't cleaned out your existing system, including the ducts, call First Call Heating and Cooling today and schedule that maintenance. 503-231-3311. That's 231-3311. I was over there this morning. I went to the headquarters this morning to see Brad Bigelow. And they do a great job, obviously, but I was over there on other business. First Call Heating and Cooling is a supporting sponsor of the Bald-Faced Truth Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament. That's happening on July the 7th out at the Reserve. Our celebrity golfers are out there. We have a good time, and we raise money for kids in the community, kids in art, music, education, athletics. And if you want more information on the Bald-Faced Truth Foundation, you can go to baldfacetruth.org. But a high five and a fist bump to First Call Heating and Cooling that they do a great job supporting the community as well. Yogi Roth, our next guest, Renaissance man, Pac-12 football analyst joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm good. Where are you today? Where's Yogi?
I'm in Venice Beach right now.
Pretty nice?
It's beautiful. Yeah. Perfect day. Waves are up. All is good in SoCal.
Are you a surfer?
Yeah. When I finished playing at Pitt, I actually moved to Australia and played over there because I wasn't good enough for the NFL and fell in love with living on the water, surfing every day, and had to find my way to the West Coast when I came back and got lucky and made my way to L.A. and SC and haven't left ever since, man.
I always feel like I have to be within, you know, a short drive of the ocean or water. I don't think I could live landlocked permanently.
Yeah, no, there's something about that. I talk to Coach Carroll about that all the time, you know, and, you know, you dive into the psychology of the water and, you know, the ions from the sand. There's a million, you know, great examples of what that does for you. But I think once you get a taste of it, you know, I've always told my friends, if I started coaching at Iowa State, I'd probably still be doing it. But since I started at SC in LA, I got a taste of the beach, and it's going to be hard for me to ever leave this.
Yogi Roth is our guest. He's with the Pac-12 Network as a football analyst. You've done a lot of things, writing. You've been on Vision Quest. You've been an actor and director. What was the TED Talk stuff like for you?
Oh, it was really magical, man. I did it with a friend named Alexis Jones, who you need to meet. Her and I just did a film. We're actually going to screen it at the Pac-12 Networks on Friday. It's called Protect Her. It's about how athletes can be the cure to stopping sexual violence on college campuses instead of the problem. And I know you talked to Brenda Tracy about that stuff a lot. So we'll make sure we get you a link of that. But she invited me to do it. She was doing it in Austin, and it was TEDx Women. And it was actually the most ever seen online in TEDx history, which was pretty rad. And for me, I was trying to think of what story to tell. And I talked about the biggest heartbreak in my life. And I built this whole story up about how I met this individual. I met this thing when I was a kid, and we fell in love. And then before you know, we went to college together, and we slept in the same bed together. And then on Christmas in 2004, she bailed me. And the whole audience, their jaw was kind of on the ground. Like, I can't believe she'd do that. And then I revealed that it was football. And that had been, you know, kind of my love, and married that with the story of my grandparents, who were both Holocaust survivors, and talked about how they always said that, you know, you'd rather love and give than hold on and hate. And I thought that was a cool message to play within the game, because when you leave the game, as you know, you can have a bitter taste in your mouth if it doesn't go as you planned when you were a kid. And I never kind of wanted to go down that road.
It's interesting because, you know, when you said that your grandparents were Holocaust survivors, that, you know, all I can think about when you say that is Sean Spicer in the White House press corps and that whole incident. And I'm just slapping my forehead going, how could he say that? And I know he came out and apologized and stuff after, but he said he was apologizing to anybody who was offended. How did you take what he said, and was the apology enough?
Well, look, I mean, none of us are perfect. We all make mistakes. You know, you and I would do it all the time on our shows or our games or whatever. That to me was clearly ignorant. You know, I just got back from Amsterdam and I went to the Anne Frank Museum for the first time. And, you know, when you grow up in a home where your dinner is across the table from, you know, my grandfather had 8 machine gun holes in his upper left shoulder and played dead for 2 days, and a gypsy saved him. You know, and back in the day, gypsies were seen as people you never wanted to be around, right? So the ultimate, you know, show of, you know, there are no lines, there are no difference of opinions, regardless of race or religion or creed or color. And I learned that as a kid, man. So to hear him say that, I was disgusted, you know. But you look at wherever you lean politically, I mean, there's going to be disagreements. I mean, one of the few positives I look at this election, and whether it's the daily Sean Spicer, you know, unique remarks, is that we get to see a part of this country that, you know, some of us, you know, at least for me, and I never really wanted to look at. Well, it's there. So, you know, like my dad has always taught me, go have the conversation. You know, so I could be pissed and I could be frustrated and I could complain to all my friends and we could have a big hoorah here in Venice Beach because everybody's left of center. Yeah. Or I could sit across from somebody who is right of center or maybe thinks that the Holocaust actually didn't occur or whatever the argument is, and say, you know what, just talk to me and tell me why you feel that way. And that's what I would do if I ever had a chance to meet Sean Spicer.
Yogi Roth, Pac-12 football analyst, is our guest. You know, Willie Taggart brought the Ducks up to Portland, had a scrimmage. It was obviously a get-to-know-Willie day, and 3,000 fans showed up. It was good for Willie Taggart. What is he up against with a program in his first year that maybe he doesn't know?
Well, it's the conference, you know, and you talk to any first-time head coach in this conference, when they get in here, it's, you know, you could talk to whether it was Chris Peterson his first year or Jim Mora's first year. I mean, anybody who comes outside of the footprint, specifically, I mean, Willie clearly outside the footprint the last couple of years, it's so much better than you think. I mean, every week. So I look at them and, you know, you look at Nebraska and Wyoming week 2 and 3, you know, you got to win those games, you know, just to put yourself in position. You're going to go on the road to an ASU team. And I just watched their spring game on the Pac-12 Network this morning, and they're pretty good, you know. They got players. I think their personnel is better than Oregon. So I think that's always the surprise is, wow, every week it just keeps hitting you with haymakers time and time and time again. And I can't wait to see him deal with that, because it is a different level. I mean, you see it when coordinators come in and they come in from smaller schools and they got away with certain things at their school. Well, the athletes are better. The schemes are better. I don't want to necessarily say the coaches are more, you know, football intelligent, but the schemes are more intricate at times, and guys can do more. You know, this conference gets lit up a lot for being pass happy, but you look at some of the defensive players coming back this year. I think this conference is as good as it's been defensively from a personnel standpoint in a while across the board. And there's a lot of all conference type of talent. And I'm looking at Oregon State and all those outside backers that played. I mean, they're gifted players. And then I look at the opposite of SC, and I think the best defensive player in the conference might be Achenna Nwosu, who majority of your listeners may not even know. I mean, he's going to be a freak this year. So that to me is, you know, those are the two things that I think you don't really get prepared for until you see it in person.
You know, Gary Anderson said something just like that yesterday, where he was talking and said, like, he thought the conference was good, but then he got in it and kind of looked around on a week-to-week basis and suddenly realized he couldn't win a game because he didn't have the talent. And I think he feels like he's there. Do you think Oregon State could be a surprise team, or are they still off the pace?
No, I do. No doubt. I've called so many of their games. We did the drive, obviously, on the Pac-12 Network his first year. So we're kind of embedded in the program with that documentary series. And I look at them off the bat, and why couldn't they go 4-0? Realistically, why not? You know, obviously they got to get good at quarterback, right?
Yeah.
The pass game and what we saw in the spring game, clearly it's just a taste, but you know, Jake Luton's the guy, you know, they bring in the young receiver. They're clearly going to be better on defense. Okay. You win, you beat Portland State. You assume they could beat Minnesota at Wazoo. I wouldn't be surprised if they won the game at Colorado State. Now we're 4-0. But think about that. That's pretty impressive. I would pick them to win those games. So I think they're going to go to a bowl game this year. To be honest, just because I've seen the development of the temperament of the team. I mean, so much in this Pac-12 comes down to a couple plays, and they're not always in the fourth quarter when fans are glued into the game. It's a third down. It's a special teams play. It's not going out of bounds. It's all of the, I call it fundamental football intelligence. And not a lot of teams across the country have it, because in high school, I don't think they develop it a lot because it's so much pitch and catch. It's a different game. They've really developed that there with young players that played early, and they compete their tails off when you watch the film and break it down snap by snap. So I think they go to a bowl game this year. I think they battle every team ridiculously competitively, kind of like Colorado 2 years ago. You know, they wouldn't surprise me to kind of be on that pseudo trajectory. And if they can get hot and find a QB in 2 years with all those players now as third-year players on the defensive side, they might be able to make a little bit of noise.
You're listening to the Pac-12 football analyst Yogi Roth here on The Game. Yogi, the rest of this conference, we have teams that we don't generally talk about a lot. I mean, we always talk about USC or Oregon or Washington. Is there another sleeper that you see that you think is dangerous this next year? Arizona or Washington State or somebody that doesn't get a lot of run?
You know, I did the Colorado spring game. They're coming. You know, I mean, this is not just a team that, you know, last year, I get it. You look at their schedule and they kind of hit it right in terms of who they played, who was injured when they played. But I think it's time for us to recognize that they're a really solid program. I mean, they should be a top 25 team, in my opinion. You look at how they've recruited, just what they did last year. I think they brought 10 guys out of the state of Texas, and they were dudes that they beat Texas on. You know, they pull out three of the top receivers in Texas. I think they have the deepest receiving core in the Pac-12 when you look at where these guys can be projected as. And I know what I'm saying. I just called SC's game over the weekend, and they got five dudes that started every school in the Pac-12, in my opinion. So I think that they're a team defensively, that their athletes are better than the guys they lost. I don't know if they're as good at football players right now, meaning can they make the plays on the ball, do those types of things that experience kind of teach you. So I'd go there. I'm pumped to see Utah and see what this new offense is like. You know, obviously a new coordinator coming in from Eastern Washington. So I'm pumped to see what Troy Taylor can do, and can they finish, who's going to be their quarterback. And then kind of like the Bruins and Stanford are interesting ones to me. They're probably the most compelling teams. Stanford, they're so much longer than people give them credit for, in my opinion. You know, we always think power run, they're just going to bloody you. But I was there last weekend or 2 weeks ago, and they're so athletic on the defensive side. And, you know, that's where you kind of win in this league. So I'm excited for them, and then for the Bruins and Josh and this entire offensive staff. I'm going to watch them tomorrow morning for the first time this spring, but I can't wait to see their development, because there's so much intrigue. As LA's got two top 10 draft picks next year, and Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold.
We saw with Chip Kelly and Rich Rod coming in, you know, all the spread stuff, and then now we've seen kind of an adjustment to that. What's the football going to look like in this conference next season, maybe the next couple seasons? Do you see the trend heading somewhere?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that you have to look at the quarterback play now. You know, this year it's going to be pretty impressive. I mean, we just mentioned those two guys in L.A., and then I think Luke Falk, guys I've talked to in the league, you know, he could be a late first-round draft pick. Who knows? You know, Jake Browning, obviously he could be special. Hopefully he gets healthy again. There's a lot of players, you know, when we look at that stuff. And I look at offense now, and I think the NFL's influence is pretty impressive in terms of, we thought they would shift. I definitely thought it would shift, and it hasn't. And I've talked to guys in the league, and they say, you know, we talk to these quarterbacks coming out, and we interview them, and they say all the right stuff on the board because, you know, their season ends, and they went to X school that's a spread team, and they get trained up by George Whitfield or Jordan Palmer, a variety of these quarterback trainers who are awesome. And they haven't memorized. But do they really know it? Have they really dissected defenses? Have they really seen rotations? Can they really identify fronts in real time? And a lot of the times you can't because you just haven't done it. So I think you're going to start to see that shift a little bit. You know, tune in this weekend on the Pac-12 Network. I'm doing the Cal spring game. And, you know, what Bo Baldwin is doing is kind of that blend of offense, right? It's teaching functional football intelligence, the stuff that we used to teach back in the day in high school but haven't had to in the last decade because it's been about – best athlete, get the ball out, make plays in space, and throw it to quote-unquote green grass. Well, I think that you're going to see it turn a little bit because you're seeing young quarterbacks not even get a shot in the league anymore or not thrive when they get there. And the ones that have are either ridiculously smart and savvy or have been trained in that style of system. And you know, this draft's going to be interesting because Davis Webb is a great example. He may not be a first-round type of quarterback, but he's got first-round intangibles in terms of how he knows the game. I can't wait to see where he gets picked and what a team does because he could be a backup for 6-7 years versus some of these other guys that are hyped up earlier who may not have been exposed to that type of system.
When I talked to Larry Scott, he talks about the facilities that everybody in the conference has going and that there are a lot of advantages to being in the Pac-12. There's always been the perception that Washington State and Oregon State were the have-nots or maybe they had some recruiting challenges given their geography. Do you see that, or has that leveled out with everybody getting facilities?
Well, I think it's leveled out with facilities, and now look out with these new recruiting rules, man. I mean, it's going to change the game. And I say that because if I could take my official visit in April to Pullman, or even April to, you know, Corvallis, or April even to Seattle, if I'm an Arizona school, a warm weather school, that is not a great thing because now I can't say, well, you went there in December and it was pouring rain, man. Come here for the sunshine, right? I mean, you're going to see a shift in elements. And to your point of the facilities, and we could look at the schools you mentioned, you look at Colorado and up and down the entire coast. I mean, everybody's changing and they're continually adding and evolving. So I think these new recruiting rules are going to be really interesting in terms of the entire landscape. And you might see the rich get richer at times. And then I think the one benefit for the smaller schools, the Wazoos, the Oregon States, is they're not going to let kids play with them, you know, because they're going to sign. And that's going to be how it's going to be because this early signing period, I think, will be critical where they won't be waiting on a kid. And more importantly, they won't get SC coming in and stealing a receiver late. You know, if the kid wants to waiver, they can just move on and go get somebody. And I would bet those types of schools, the mid-level of these Pac-12 schools, I bet majority of their signing classes are done in that December signing period.
It's so funny you brought that up. 3 years ago, Rich Rod came on the show. He wanted to come on. It was pouring rain here. And listen to what he said. He said this. He had three different mentions like this.
Yeah, I don't know what it's like up in Portland right now, but it's 75 and sunny again in Tucson. So just being outside and enjoying the weather is really fun.
I mean, he kept bringing that.
You know, we got beautiful weather, so when spring ball gets over, I'll get that there a couple times.
He kept talking about the weather, You're right. Thanks.
Yeah, these new rules are going to be really fun to watch. And what I hope happens is the NCAA really enforces on them, you know, specifically around the no contact period. And I hope they still have some more changes coming. I would love, you know, to me, the only bummer in college football is that I'm a college basketball coach. I could be Coach K and go watch a kid play in Las Vegas, but I can't be Willie Taggart and go watch a kid compete at the opening right down the street. I mean, that to me is a bummer for the student athlete. I could be a volleyball coach and I could literally coach a kid and I could be a Nike school and I could coach a kid with an Adidas jersey on him. Like, how is that even close to being fair? So I hope that rule gets altered, but overall, I thought the rules were pretty impressive in terms of what was changed.
Yogi Roth, you're the best, man. I appreciate your time.
Anytime, brother. Talk to you soon.
There he is, Yogi Roth, Pac-12 football analyst, director, actor, entrepreneur, TEDx speaker, Renaissance man, guy on a vision quest. Just took a tour of Iceland. We didn't even have time to talk about that. Leave it right here. Punch It Audio, the best sound from all around. Plus, later in the show, Scott Barnes, Oregon State Athletic Director, takes a victory lap.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
John Canzano is on the game.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy.
because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
My friends over at Bricks Tavern are doing a, they're partnering with Pints for Parkinson's. Have you seen, do you know what this is about? Basically, you get a pint passport, and it costs you $25. It gets you 10 pints of beer from various locations, restaurants, pubs, including the Great Bricks Tavern. And basically, it benefits the Brian Grant Foundation. You get great beer. It's happening in 5 cities, 10 pints for $25. You're going to buy the 10 pints anyway. You get them for $25, and you can go to Bricks and pick up a Pints for Passport passport. We also have a couple Pints for Passports in hand now, and we're going to tell you how to win them later in the show. And I'm going to preview that by telling you, if you have a hamster, you may be uniquely qualified to win the Pints for Passports. But this is a great business, Bricks Tavern. And I love the family feel to the place, but I also know that they care deeply about the community, and their partnership with the Brian Grant Foundation on Pints for Parkinson's is not only inspiring, but necessary. We're talking about the ability for you to hold in your hot little hands a ticket for your very own pub crawl. You create the pub crawl. Turn your microphone on.
I love it. Let's do this.
She's over here talking and her microphone's not on.
I was just looking at my sandwich.
Yeah, shattered lunch. She's got a foot rub. Now Kiki's going to join us. But
oh, yeah.
You have, basically, you bring your passport. That you buy the passport at Bricks Tavern or any of the locations that have them. And then you bring the passport into the participating location. They give you a stamp in exchange for a pint. You get 10 stamps for $25. You support the Brian Grant Foundation. You do a great thing for people with a complex and debilitating disease. So cheers to you. Cheers to Bricks Tavern, where you can find at 13th and Northwest Hoyt in the Pearl. That's my place. You know, the happy hour and food and drink.
Place.
Great food, menu.
Do you remember when I had my birthday party there a couple years ago?
I was
and
there.
The loft up there, which is fantastic.
There's always a reason to hit the Bricks.
Oh, absolutely. I'm always hitting the Bricks.
Always a reason to do it. But Pints for Parkinson's is a great reason. I'll tell you later in the show how you can win. I've got two of them to give away. How you can win Pints for Parkinson's. I'll get you $25 worth of pints. And if you are somebody who just wants to help the Brian Grant Foundation and go get great food and good times, you're talking about new friends, and whether it's a large group or a small group or you're by yourself, you can go to Bricks Tavern at BricksTavern.com or find them in the Pearl District.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Let's start with the Blazers. Kevin Durant questionable with that calf strain for Game 2. Yusuf Nurkic not questionable for Game 2. He erased all questions. Punch it.
Yeah, I feel better, but I think it's going to be fair enough to say straight. I mean, I would like to play, but I think I'm not ready, so I'm not going to play game second.
How about after that? Too early to decide?
Yeah, I'm going to go day by day. It's hard to talk about like 5 days in the front, but let's see what happens.
He says he's day by day. Aren't we all day by day, as Dan Patrick once said? Yusuf Nurkic should not play in this series. Gliss thinks he should play and will play in this series. I think Gliss hit his head somewhere in the last 24 to 48 hours. And by the way, our listeners don't know. You showed up yesterday with two black eyes.
I was just going to say, I think we need a little explanation because he looks like he's seen better days.
You look like hell. Your eyes are bloodshot red. You look like you got back alley whipped, man. What happened?
I popped some blood vessels puking.
Oh, what? Why did you sugarcoat it?
Let's get right to it. All I need to say.
You were just under the weather?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you got black eyes.
Puking everywhere.
Like Irish flu?
Until about 2 a.m.
What kind of sickness? Like a self-imposed sickness?
You got the flu,
like,
or you got something else?
I don't have the flu. I feel fine now. I'm good to go.
Wow. He's good to go. Nurt.
Should Nurt play or no? Is he going to play in this series?
I think he's going to play.
No.
No.
No, he's not.
I think you're nuts.
That's a suicide mission.
Should he play?
No.
If the doctors clear him to play, then I'm good with it. I trust in the medical staff.
I think the answer, though, was buried in what he said. Now, listen. English is not his first language, okay? And I think he said something key in this statement, that an athlete that had English as his first language would have been able to talk around. But I think Yusuf Nurkic gave you the Rosetta Stone for whether or not he's playing in this series in this comment. Listen, I'm going to replay it.
Yeah, I feel better, but I think it's going to be fair enough to say straight. I mean, I would like to play, but I think I'm not ready, so I'm not going to play game second.
I think I'm not ready.
That's someone's been coached up there.
He is relying on someone else who's telling him he's not ready. And that's not going to change here in a week or a day or 2 weeks. And look, Bill Walton's foot. Sam Bowie, knee. Greg Oden, patella, ankle, whatever.
Those are different guys, though.
Yeah, but, yeah, well,
Big human being, dude. You don't mess with that.
There's no upside to this. And as much as I love the Blazers and as much as they played their hearts out in game one, and God love them for it, there's no way they're going to win this series, whether Nurk comes back or not. And the only thing that you're going to do is jeopardize the future with his leg. And that's, you just don't do that. You don't. It's dumb.
Gliss said, thought the same thing until he hit his head on the toilet. Rockets coach Mike D'Antoni joined the Dan Patrick Show right here on 102.9 and 750 The Game. He's basically pandering and banging the drum for James Harden as the MVP. Here's D'Antoni. Punch it.
If I was sizing it up, just the efficiency of James, the number of points that he has created on his team compared to the other guy, and the number of wins and what he means to our offense and making other guys better. He is the best. He's the best I've ever seen at certain aspects of the game, and he does it very efficiently, and that's why I think he's the most valuable player.
He's a really good offensive player, skilled guy. He's fun to watch. He can make a big guy look stupid. Like if he was, like I see those videos on Instagram of guys like dribbling the balls, Rucker Park style, and they dribble the ball off the guy's head, and then they dribble around him, and they get a layup that make you look stupid, make you fall down. James Harden could do that all day. Is he the most valuable player? I think D'Antoni's system suits Harden. I think Harden's a really good offensive player. I'm impressed with what he did this year. But in a year in which Russell Westbrook averaged a triple-double while playing 9 fewer minutes per game than Harden, I have a hard time giving James Harden the vote in that race. Better team. Going to win that series, yes, but not the MVP. He's second. No shame in that. Memphis Grizzlies coach David Fizdale not happy with the officiating last night. By the way, Kawhi Leonard shot more free throws than the entire Grizzlies team. Zach Randolph didn't even get one. Fizdale's going to pay a fine. Punch it.
You know, it's unfortunate that I got a guy like Mike Conley who in his whole career has got zero technical fouls and just cannot seem to get the proper respect from the officials that he deserves. Very poorly officiated basketball game. Zach Randolph, the most rugged guy in the game, had zero free throws, but somehow Kawhi Leonard had 19 free throws. First half, we shot 19 shots in the paint. We had 6 free throws. They shot 11 times in the paint, and they had 23 free throws. I'm not a numbers guy, but that doesn't seem to add up. Overall, 35 times we shot the ball in the paint. We had 15 free throws for the game. They shot 18 times in the paint and had 32 free throws. Kawhi shot more free throws than our whole team. Explain it to me. We don't get the respect that these guys deserve because Mike Conley doesn't go crazy. He has class, and he just plays the game. But I'm not going to let them treat us that way. You know, I know Pop's got pedigree, and I'm a young rookie, but they're not going to rook us. That's unacceptable. That was unprofessional. My guys dug in that game and earned the right to be in the game, and they did not even give us a chance. Take that for data.
Pounded the desk, walked off, called a shot. Have they fined him yet, Curtis Rogers?
Haven't seen anything. I imagine that news will come down today.
I'm thinking they're going to fine him $1 billion for that tirade.
There's no at least 20,000.
Yeah, there's no gray area
there.
Yeah,
what's the over-under on the, like, 30, 40? How do they determine the dollar?
You know
what?
I don't know exactly, but I do know that your prior comments figure into that. As Mark Cuban has said, that You know, he didn't care about. He's got to back his players, though. I mean, this is a young.
I love it.
Young
I think
coach.
Money well spent for sure. And I, the organization will probably end up paying the fine.
You think
for
him. So, though? I'm like CJ so. McCollum. I like my money. To me, it's like, you're gonna get fined here. This is gonna be a bad one.
I don't think he cares because I do think the organization will pay it for him.
What's your favorite part of the rant?
The rook. We're not going to be rooked. I like that. I thought that was a really nice. Execution of that. And I do like the fist pounding. I like the fact that he mentions that he's not a numbers guy. I would have, you know, the only way that that could have been better is if he would have given like a Charlie Babbitt reference. That would have been nice. But I give him if I'm using the John Canzano scale, I give him a 98 for that.
All right. Well, this is my favorite part.
You know, I know Pop's got pedigree and I'm a young rookie, but they're not going to rook us.
That part?
Yeah, that's it.
My second favorite part is this.
He just plays the game, but I'm not going to let them treat us that way.
This part, when he says he got class.
He has class, and he just plays the game. But he has class, and he just plays the game.
I love that
part.
But
I'm not going to let them. He has class, and he just plays.
That's almost
I love him. I love him now. Reminds me of, like, back in the day, Dennis Green. The Bears are who we thought they were, that kind of a thing.
Yeah. We need a Denny Green.
Mm-hmm.
It's better. Gary Anderson, Oregon State head coach, joined the Irregular guys yesterday. He's talking about teaching his players how to prepare for the upcoming season. I think this is interesting. They really had winter football instead of spring football. Punch it.
For us, I would say this. Our ability to make sure as a coaching staff, we're continually helping our kids learn how to prepare. And when I say that, that's watching film, that's getting themselves in the moment, that's nutrition, that's really studying the game of football and being able to dissect their position or the person that they're playing against. To me, that's next step.
Yeah, and he's still doing a lot of teaching. We talk about culture. We talk about how hard Oregon State played last year because those are the things that I was most impressed with Gary Anderson. And Yogi Roth talked about it earlier. And if you missed Yogi Roth, go out and grab the podcast of that. But Yogi Roth talked about them possibly starting 4-0 this season. They've got to be better at the quarterback position. But when you talk about the temperament of this team, when you talk about how hard they just play so hard. That's how they won games last year. Now we're going to start to see them with a little bit of talent. And I'm curious to see how far that talent can carry them and what's the balance between being talented at Oregon State and being tough. Willie Taggart, meanwhile, talked about the learning curve for his coaching staff. This is interesting. Punch it.
So often we talk about the players, but as coaches as well, you know, a lot of these guys wasn't with me at USF, so our coaches are learning what we're trying to do from a practice standpoint. So just watching everybody come together, coaches and players, and understand and try to get on the same page.
It's a big moving target because you've got coaches who are all coming from different places trying to figure out what is the culture here and who's leading it. Then you've got players that are coming in from high school. You got returning players who are part of broken culture under Mark Helfrich. So it is a really interesting thing, and how this will mesh will determine how successful Willie Taggart is ultimately. Jordan Bell, arguably the best player in the NCAA tournament. I don't think it's arguable. I think he was the best player in the NCAA tournament for Oregon. He's headed to the NBA. Punch it.
Get it into Bell. Bell lost it. Kansas with it. Mason down to Locust. Locust blocked by Jordan Bell.
There it is. There's the clip. Jordan Bell announcing today that he will forego his senior season. He will go to the NBA draft, where if you're the Portland Trailblazers, right around number 30 or so, you may have an ability to pick Jordan Bell. But in that clip, it summarized Jordan Bell, the best and the worst parts of him. His offensive game needs to improve to play in at the next level. It's really the part of him that needs to get better, because in the NBA, he's going to have to score a little bit to be on the court. But he is the perfect rim protector for a team that has bad defensive guards and doesn't need a lot of offensive production out of the four position. And I can think of one NBA team right now, Portland, that could use a rim protector who could make the deficiencies in your backcourt not matter as much. And really, the Warriors have done it with Draymond Green. Could the Draymond Green of this draft be Jordan Bell? I don't think he has the offense that Green has, but he's an interesting defensive player. And if he works on his offensive game, you know, he's got a chance. Adam Pac-Man Jones, not pleased. Not pleased because a reporter asked him about his off-season arrest. Punch it.
I know you said you were thankful for the organization. Thank you back. Is there anything you have to show the fans, that you prove the fans, to, for them to welcome you back? Yes, sir. There's a lot of people upset.
Didn't I just tell you don't ask me that?
Yeah, but, you know.
You out the conclusion. Turn around. Go back. Go back that way. Bye. See you. Next question. That's his last interview for the year. See y'all later. Don't come over here no more for the rest of the year.
Jones spoke for 4 minutes before he yelled at the reporter there, and you heard it. He announced before the interview that he would not be taking any questions related to the arrest. It was kind of a tangent of that, and he entered an alcohol-related treatment program and an anger management program in the off-season after his arrest on charges of harassment with a bodily substance, assault, obstructing official business, and disorderly conduct. Felony charges. Police say he spit in the hand of a nurse at Cincinnati jail, and he's caught on camera cursing at police and telling a police officer, quote, "I hope you die tomorrow," end quote. Here's a bigger question. Why in the world are the Bengals not taking a stand against Adam Jones? Because here's the thing. He's embarrassed them a number of times. They're not a good enough franchise with, you know, as Al McGuire said, you can have one donkey, but you have two donkeys, they start multiplying. They're not a good enough franchise with enough culture to have a guy like Adam Jones in the locker room. And maybe they're a little bit in denial here, but I think people may be rolling their eyes going, well, he's a sensational player. I think there is a net loss when you have and you welcome players like Adam Jones into the locker room who have, you know, he's been in trouble several times in his career. He was suspended for the whole 2007 season. He had to pay $2 million or $12 million in damages to a victim who ended up paralyzed in that incident. He was a team captain last year. This year, he's telling a police officer, "I hope you die." If I'm the Cincinnati Bengals, I make Adam Jones an example of the kind of culture we don't want to be and don't want to be about. And Blazer fans, you guys are uniquely qualified to understand this. There is a net loss when you take problems like Adam Jones and the peripheral distraction. And by the way, can you trust this guy on game day? Because you know you can't trust him on Saturday night. There is a net loss here that is it's not tangible. And that's why I think sports franchises that get distracted and go, "He's a really good player. We could use him on defense." They get distracted and they get blinded by that. And they don't understand how this affects locker room culture, sponsorships, the way that the fan base feels about the team, team chemistry in general, and the trajectory of the franchise overall. You could argue that the Blazers were more interesting when they had chemistry problems and won a bunch of games. But I can tell you they were not a franchise that made the city of Portland proud. And that whole experiment, that whole sociology experiment that Bob Witts had put on in Portland, it failed. They didn't win, and it embarrassed you. Because when you were in airports in Cleveland and you were in airports in Dallas and you had your Portland thing on, people went, "Jailblazers." There's a net loss there that the Cincinnati Bengals haven't figured out yet. Leave it right here. Coming up, we're going to talk about bandwagon fans. Where's the biggest bandwagon in sports? And which sports fan base deserves to be on the bandwagon? We'll talk about that next.
BFT. This is 102.9 and 750, The Game.
OmniGuard Security. That's my security company. I use them because they're the best, and I use them because I like their technology. I geek out on it. They've got mobile apps. They've got the ability to monitor the alarm with your mobile device, look at security video. It's all wireless. Right now, I can arm, I can disarm, I can check the house. There's a door left open, which happens at my house because we got a pack of kids living over there. The doors are left open. I can go, "Hey, there's a door open." And why is that important? We got a swim spa, the backyard. If there's a door open and we have a 2-year-old or an 11-month-old running around, that's not just security, that's family safety. So, yes, secure your business, secure your home. OmniGuardSecurity.com or call them at 503-970-7147. That's 970-7147, OmniGuard Security. All right, interesting thing came up over the weekend. Somebody said, I was on Twitter, and I tweeted, and by the way, if you're on Twitter, that means you have an email address. It doesn't make you an expert, okay? You have an email address, you were able to sign up for an account. That doesn't make you qualified to have a conversation with me or to be entitled to an answer. I get people all day long who are tweeting at me going, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? I've done something since the start of the NCAA tournament. I have not responded to anybody on Twitter. NCAA tournament, March Madness. I'll like things, but I'm not getting into big back and forth. You want to know what I think? You can read, you can listen, you can follow on Twitter. That's fine. If I want to know what you think, I'll do the same. It isn't to say I don't read your comments. I'm not getting a big back and forth with you. But there was a guy on Twitter who said, just this last week, I was tweeting about the Blazer game on Sunday, Easter Sunday. And he said, oh, you're on the bandwagon now. Which is, like, to me, tells me that you don't pay attention to, like, other big cities. Because what matters in the big city is going to be on the radar of the sports columnist and the radio show host and the TV commentator. That's how they decide what goes in the news and what doesn't go in the news. Kiki, you have a background in television
news.
Yes,
I do.
How do you decide which stories get in the news?
Yeah, that's a great question. It just depends. We have to think about, you know, how many people are impacted by the story. Quite frankly, there's logistics in terms of getting to the story. You know, there's all sorts of things that go on behind the scenes that I think people have no idea. You know, and sometimes you can send a reporter out to a story. This has happened to me several times as a producer. You send a reporter out to cover a story because you think it's going to go one way, and the reporter comes back and the story completely goes a different direction. So then you kind of have to change your mindset. But there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes.
All right. But to me, there's no such thing as a bandwagon. But in the fan world, maybe there is in your world. Maybe you think and see and feel differently. But so here's my question to you. And if you're out there listening to the show or listening to the podcast or streaming or listening on your mobile device, maybe give this just a second of thought and let me know what you think about this. Which fan base out there is the biggest bandwagon fan base? And maybe explain to me it within that. What is the bandwagon? At 417-7575. And then tell me this, because this was an interesting discussion that went out, because somebody sent out a poll and said, what's the biggest bandwagon fan base? And they were talking about the Cubs fans, and they were talking about the Ducks fans, and the Beaver fans, and the Washington Husky fans, and all this stuff was going flying back and forth on the thread. And like I said, I read it, I don't comment on it. But I thought to myself, okay, if Duck fans are the biggest bandwagon fan base ever, or Cubs fans, it's possible, are the biggest bandwagon fan base ever, which fan base out there deserves to have a bandwagon? What I mean is, Kansas football, should they have a bandwagon year?
No.
Like, no.
Come on.
But
if they do, it's a really weak one.
Yeah, but which fan base deserves it? But maybe just start this conversation by which fan base has the biggest bandwagon? Which, you know, tell me, of those out there across all sports, NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, college athletics, where are the bandwagons and where are they biggest? 417-7575. Kiki, where's the biggest bandwagon in sports?
Well, I would have to say, you know, with a heavy heart right now, the Cubs have to be in the top three. There are people coming out of the woodwork that they've been a Cubs fan and
brand new Cubby hat.
Yeah, it's all new gear, but then they don't know, you know, the right field. They don't know the streets, Waveland or Sheffield. They don't know anything about it, but, you know.
Never even been to Wrigley.
Exactly. I think there's a lot
never
of that going on.
Never seen the Ivy.
I think there's a lot of that going on right now. So I'm going to put them in the top three. I'm sure there's, I always think of New York Yankee fans as bandwagon, but at the same time as I say that, I realize how moronic that sounds because they've won so many championships. But I think in terms of just marketability, you see people wearing, you know, New York Yankee hats that I think they have no idea anything about baseball.
And how do you tell a bandwagon fan? You say doesn't know the streets outside the stadium,
mm-hmm.
doesn't know the coaches,
yeah,
doesn't know stats, doesn't know historical information about the team. And I always ask people, well, what are the other teams that you follow?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be like, oh, I'm a Cubs fan, and I'm a Patriots fan, and I'm a Spurs fan. And I'm like, oh,
right.
You're that fan.
Exactly.
Because I think you can weed them out by asking them the other teams they root for.
Yeah.
All right, let's go out to the phones, 417-7575. Austin's in Salmon Creek. Austin, what's the biggest bandwagon?
I've got two different perspectives on NFL fan base. You know, I'm a diehard Dallas Cowboys fan, and we are by far the biggest bandwagon fans out there. We were nowhere to be found last year, but now you can't see what's top four in jersey sales. You got Dak, you got what, Zeke, you got Jay Witt, you got
Spot.
And on the opposite side of things, just because here come lately, I mean, check the show previous to you. Seahawks, baby. Biggest bandwagon fans.
12th man.
Love you guys.
Yep. 12th man is just the big bandwagon. It's like 60,000 people on that thing. Curtis Rogers, you were just up in Seattle.
I definitely was.
How's that bandwagon in Seattle doing right now?
Right now, it's a little wounded.
Yeah.
You've got players threatening coaches. You got Richard Sherman trade rumors going around. It's not doing well. The axles are starting to grease up a little bit.
What are those people going to do? 417-7575 is the number. I have a line open now. Sean's on I-5. Sean, where's the biggest bandwagon?
Well, I have to agree with Austin just a little bit, only because I've been a lifelong Dallas Cowboys fan, too, and it's amazing how all of a sudden there's so many more fans around now that we actually have a team. But I would have to go with the Golden State Warriors only for the fact that they did it the right way. They built through the draft. They brought in a few free agents, and they were a fun team to root for when the Blazers got taken out. I was rooting for them when they won their championship, and now all of a sudden I hate them. I can't stand the Splash Brothers. I can't stand Draymond Green's antics, and it goes from everybody from loving them for doing everything the right way through their ownership, through their management and everything. So now I'm jumping off of their bandwagon only for the fact not that they're blowing out the Blazers at the moment, but just for the fact that they're the ones that are winning now.
I think that's interesting, too, because I've always been anti-fan bandwagon when it comes to fan bases. I've always been like, well, I can't root for the Yankees. I can't root for the Dallas Cowboys. You can't root for the Packers. And I was a 49er fan when they were bad, okay? They were 2-14. I went to a game. They played the Saints at home. It was terrible. They were 6-10. Then they got good, and I really celebrated that season that they won that first Super Bowl. But I do agree, like, it wasn't as fun later when they were winning and winning and winning. And I looked around, and I was like, where were all these people when they were bad? And I celebrated it, and I remained a 49er fan. But I got to be honest, I stopped buying gear because I didn't want people to think I just bought gear. And I was a San Francisco Giants fan when they were bad. I was at a game when the Crazy Crab and Will Clark and Robbie Thompson were rookies, and they had all this hope. And, you know, I was at a game. It was Fan Appreciation Day. It was the last day of the season one year, in the 1980s. They lost their 100th game on Fan Appreciation Day. And I was like, thanks a lot for pinning 100 losses on a 13-year-old kid. But I remember that day. It was like they gave away bicycles and cars and stuff like that. And I was thinking, well, they lost 100 games. Can I have a chocolate malt now? It was like, it was okay. And then they got good and they got in that new ballpark and they got really good. Suddenly they had more money to spend than anybody and they were just phenomenal. And I'll be honest, I look around my closet now and I got some Giants stuff, but I almost feel like I'm on the bandwagon a little bit with them because I realized that, like everybody else is, I couldn't believe it when I went back to the Bay Area, how much Giants stuff is around. Like, I was at the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk, nobody wearing A's stuff. And it used to be pretty divided in the Bay Area. Now it's like all Giants because everybody wants to be a winner. What is the bandwagon about? And where's the biggest bandwagon in sports? You tell me at 417-7575. I'm going to ask Gliss what his big bandwagon pick is. I'm going to pick Notre Dame football. Notre Dame fans, they have a special relationship with the university. There are people who went to school in South Bend, and there are a lot of people who just like to buy South Bend and Notre Dame stuff when they're really good. And I go into sporting goods stores that have, like, the jerseys and the sweatshirts and everything. You know, the fan shop place that you see that's just kind of the generic strip mall fan shop place. No matter where you are in the country, they'll have the regional teams. They'll have superstar jerseys from most teams and Notre Dame stuff. It's obnoxious to me. There's a ton of hate for Notre Dame. It's a lot of tradition. It is also a lot of hype with Notre Dame. Big bandwagon. How about the Miami Heat fans? Game 6, 2013 NBA Finals. Heat fans pouring into the streets, assuming that their team had lost to the Spurs, only to find out that one of the most historic comebacks ever seen in sports is happening inside the building. People were pounding, trying to get back into the building.
Is that crazy?
Bandwagon!
That's why I never leave a game early. I never do. Never.
People left the Final Four early.
Yeah. I mean, unless there's like a medical emergency or some sort of crazy scenario, it's just, I think it's rude. If you're at a play, you don't get up and leave. It's a performance.
Is it rude to leave a game early? I don't know.
I think it is.
Oh, it's rude. I just think it's like, why would you leave early? You're paying for that.
Yeah. I just feel like it's, you're not there for the right reasons in the sense of, I'm mad. I'm going to take my ball and go home because my team didn't win. That's like a juvenile mentality.
It happened at the Final Four. People started walking out.
Yeah.
Gliss, what do you got? What's your bandwagon?
Any sports team from Los Angeles, I would say, is a bandwagon. But I think you guys are also kind of hitting it on the head. I mean, when a team has success, that's kind of the evolution of it, I think. You talk about the Warriors. When I was in high school in the Bay Area, I wasn't a Warriors fan, but I went to a lot of Warriors games and... Man, there's a lot more Warriors fans that I went to high school with now that were not there when I was there back in high school. So
I went to see some Warriors games, and there was nobody there. Like, I remember we bought the cheap tickets and we moved down. I mean, that's how you did it before the ushers became like United Airlines flight attendants. And it's nowadays you know there were a couple guys at the Final Four. I'm on press row. Okay, I'm on press row where you need a credential to sit. And there was these two yahoos that came down out of the stands and grabbed two press seats. And then they did that whole, I don't know where my ticket is thing. When the usher came up and was like, you're sitting in media seats. Do you have a credential? And the two guys were like, where's in my pocket or which one? And pretty soon they had to move. And that's an embarrassing thing, I think, when you're moved like that. Curtis Rogers. Give me your bandwagon fans.
Bandwagon fan, I would say right now, Cleveland Cavaliers fans.
Ooh, that's strong.
Because outside of the LeBron era, they have been one of the most terrible franchises in the NBA. They've been a doormat other than this LeBron era. And all of a sudden you see people walking down the street wearing their maroon and gold colors. It's like, you can't be from Cleveland.
True. But they do have to live in Cleveland. I mean,
don't live in Cleveland. Well, they live all over the place.
Exactly. But I'm just saying, like, if you're in Cleveland and you're excited about your team, like, I totally get that. I mean, there's a reason why they call it Mistake by the Lake. I mean, I lived in Chicago and there was a big rivalry between Chicago and Cleveland, and I had friends from Cleveland. But I mean, you know, and so honestly, like, I feel like this year the Cleveland Indians. I feel like it's their year, and I'm okay with that because the Cubs had their year, and there's no way that you can best what happened last year.
All right, let's go to LeBron talking about Cleveland. This came after everybody was wondering, would Cleveland ever win a championship again? And they did.
Take it all the way back to when I decided to come back. They said, listen, I want to bring a championship to the city, to Cleveland sports history. You know, understanding the last 50 plus years, you think about like. The Ernest Byner fumble in the late 80s to Elway going 99 yards. Think of the Jose Mesa, not being able to close in the bottom of the ninth in the World Series. You think about MJ hitting the shot, hurt around the world over Craig Elo. 07 getting swept by the Spurs, myself last year, 4-2 versus the same team. You just think about all of that.
LeBron brought that up. Dan Gilbert, owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
People of Cleveland deserve it more than any people I've ever seen or met or felt. Thank God that God loves Cleveland, Ohio. He does. And I want to... Thank everybody. Thank David Griffin in the front office, Ty and the coaching staff, everybody in the entire franchise, the best fans in the world, and LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers.
And there you have it, LeBron and the Cavaliers. It's LeBron. Let's face it, Dan Gilbert. It is LeBron who brought that championship back to Cleveland.
LeBron James.
I did it. Jeremy's in Hillsboro. Jeremy, give me your bandwagon.
The last, 10 years, I have to say the Seahawks, the Patriots, the Penguins, and the Red Sox, and the Giants.
All winners. Do you have to be a winner to be on the bandwagon? Yeah, because did the Cubs have bandwagon fans when they were bad, Kiki?
Yeah, I think so, just because I think the same thing for Boston. I think going to Wrigley Field is such a unique experience that, and I've said it on the show before, back in the day, I could swing a dead cat at Wrigley Field and not hit anybody. And now, it's completely different. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I think the same thing for Boston. I feel like you're going there and the park is so iconic that I kind of give a break for people. As a Cubs fan, when I went to Boston, I actually bought a Red Sox shirt.
Yeah, here's the thing, and somebody on Twitter says that when the Cleveland Browns win a playoff game, then you're going to see the bandwagon, because all of a sudden, there's no Cleveland Browns fans, and all of a sudden, you're going to be able to find a whole bunch of them.
Well, you're going to be able to see them, because they're going to take those brown bags off their head.
Scott Barnes, Oregon State Athletic Director, is coming up.
Someone should all go listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
John Canzano is on Sports Radio 750, The Game.
Okay, here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the Peck West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
The non-lottery teams have sorted out their differences in the NBA draft order. And for those of you who are interested in where Portland's going to be picking in the first round in June, or at least the picks they hold, they won the tiebreak with the Chicago Bulls, which means that the Portland Trailblazers hold the number 15 pick in the first round of the NBA draft. They'll pick 15th. They've got the number 20 pick that was Memphis's pick via Denver and Cleveland. And they also have the number 26 pick. Toronto and Cleveland and Utah and the Clippers all had the same record there. And the Cleveland pick ended up being 26. Could have been as good as 23. So it is 15, 20, and 26. Those are the Blazers' picks in the upcoming draft. Neil Olshay's job is going to be able to turn those guys into those picks into players. But I've tweeted that out. If you follow me on Twitter, at John Canzano BFT, that is an opportunity for you to see the draft order and where the Blazers fall. Of course, the lottery teams, the top or bottom 14 teams in the lottery, depending on how you view it, that will be sorted out by ping pong balls and random combinations. Which is kind of like, it shouldn't be sorted that way. I think they should have a 2-on-2 competition. I'm all about that right now. I got NBA jams on my brain. 2-on-2 competition. There's a lot going on at the convention center. There's this hotel project that has been dreamed about for years, and people have talked about bringing NCAA tournament games here and potentially an all-star game. Our sister station KXL tells me that the construction for the convention center hotel will start in June, supposed to be completed in 2 years, and that it may be ready for the 2020 regional game, the NCAA tournament games that are coming to Portland. 600 rooms in this hotel and potentially ready for that 2020 regional. Scott Barnes is the athletic director at Oregon State, and Oregon State led the charge for this bid. The games are coming to Moda Center, men's and women's NCAA tournament games, and Barnes joins us now. How are you, sir?
Doing excellent. Great sunny day here in Corvallis.
This is a great opportunity for Oregon State, not just to kind of lead this charge, but you've got some teams that want to be participating in these games. What does it mean to get a bid like this to our region?
Well, I think it's exciting. And you know, the old adage, it takes a village, right? You think about the Rose Quarter and Oregon Sports Authority and Travel Portland and obviously Oregon State and others who combined to put this together. And, you know, it's not just the men's tournament. We actually got five championships, including two women's, men's, and two gymnastics championships. But, it means a lot in terms of, for us, because presence in Portland is so important to us, given that the city houses the largest number of alumni, over 40,000 for us.
Yeah, that's interesting because I, you know, you guys were kind of ahead of the curve in getting down or getting up here to Portland to have events. The Ducks have come up now and held a football scrimmage. Why is that good strategy, you know, and why is that strategy that you have to maintain even if you're having success on the field?
Well, I think in one respect, it's an absolute chance for us to thank our fans that travel down to Corvallis. It also gives us events like this, give us a chance to cast that wider net, to engage folks that are alums but maybe haven't been as engaged. And so the more presence we have, this obviously being a marquee sports presence, and the ancillary events that you build around those, is a chance to build those connections, to engage your alumni base, and ultimately those folks, if they haven't been traveling down, they'll come down to Corvallis and ultimately, you know, hopefully support our student athletes. So that sustained presence in Portland is really important to us, and an event like this is a monumental step in that direction.
You have served as the chair of the NCAA selection committee. You've been involved with this tournament. You're a basketball guy. How big was this in your, you know, you walk in the door, this thing's got to be something that you're pushing from the minute you walk in.
Well, all the work was done prior to my arrival, and we certainly made a few calls and tried to get an understanding. But, you know, a lot goes into this, and the men's basketball committee isn't just about selecting teams into the field, right? They select sites, and they do regionals and Final Fours. And so, you know, when you think about the city of Portland and some of the new hotels coming online, you think about the footprint and experience that that has shown up very well in Portland in hosting these types of events. Even our staff, Zach Lasser, was a tournament manager in Salt Lake a few years back. All those things sort of fit into the ingredients of the selection process. And again, we're excited that not only we have men's basketball, but two women's basketball regionals and gymnastics here in Corvallis.
Scott Barnes with us. He's the athletic director at Oregon State. We had Yogi Rother on earlier from the Pac-12 Network, and we were talking about the football program, and he thinks that Gary Anderson has a chance not just to make a bowl game, but to continue to make strides as maybe one of the teams in the conference that could have a real identity to them. What do you see in Gary Anderson? You've known him a long time.
Well, it's eerily similar to after our second year at Utah State, and we sort of call that third year the flip in terms of 15 years without going to a bowl game, and we turned it there, and he did an outstanding job. Gary works from the inside out. He's been busy building culture, toughness, expectations of the student athletes, recruiting to that system, and now, you know, the fruits of the labor start to show up in terms of not only recruiting classes, but, you know, a big win in the Civil War. And so now we take the next step. What that looks like and will end up being, we'll wait and see. But I know one thing, it'll be progress for sure. Progress is being made, and this next season is going to be an exciting next step for Beaver football.
You know, we always talk about revenue-generating sports, but I have to think that at Oregon State, and I've looked at some of the numbers, but I think at Oregon State, you have to have football to be successful, don't you? Doesn't that stadium need to be as full as it possibly can be?
Yeah, and that's not unlike any Power Five program. Rising tide lifts all boats, and that is football. And if football in many of our programs across the country, if the football is sustained, because when you think about the business enterprise, your largest opportunity for growth and revenue streams is football, right? So if you can grow it and sustain it, that makes everybody better. Thus, the rising tide lifts all boats, and that's every program, all 17 programs. And believe me, our coaches, all of our coaches in all of our sports absolutely get that and are very supportive of that, because it's an obvious model that again, if football's successful, everybody is.
In the second year of this program, you come in after. Are you seeing a spike in revenue related to football already?
Yeah. I think this. In fact, this year we're absolutely above budgeted revenue in year two. You know, we'll be conservative about our estimates moving forward. Obviously, with the Civil War at home, you know, your revenue cycles in football are a bit cyclical based on rivalry games at home, and obviously Oregon it provides that. So, but what's key is sustainable efforts here, and I think what Gary's done from the inside out is to lay that solid foundation relative to the coaches he's hired, to the type of student athletes he's recruiting, to the culture he's building, and that's going to last a long, long time.
We're talking to Scott Barnes, Oregon State Athletic Director. When those bids come out and Oregon State wins the bid to host the tournament games in men's and women's basketball, is it like getting in Olympic games? Is there people toasting and high-fiving? You know, where were you when you heard?
I was. We knew we'd hear this morning for sure, and I was in some meetings. But you know, it's a sense of pride, and you know, I think just getting the bid, there's a level of confidence that's extended by the NCAA because, again, they scrutinize these things, and so all of our partners in Oregon State combined, there's a level of confidence we have in ourselves and in the process, and certainly the NCAA has that confidence in us. So. We may not be passing around a champagne bottle, but we're certainly celebrating another step forward as we think about all that we're trying to do in our athletic department. And this really bodes well for all of these five events that we're going to be hosting in terms of extending our brand and casting a wider net in the Portland market and just engaging our Beaver faithful at a higher level.
Scott Barnes, Athletic Director, Oregon State. All right, you got the job. You've been on the job a little while now. Have you moved to Corvallis? Have you bought a house, moved in, or what's going on with you?
So I'm comfortably settled into the Hilton Garden Inn still from day one. But we did buy a house, and again, my son graduates June 9th. So the family, although they've made trips out here, they won't come for good until after that graduation. So I'll fly back and celebrate that with Isaac, and we'll all come out middle June and be here for good.
All right. Congratulations to you, and that was wise of you to bring them out in the summer when it's very nice. Everybody's going to love it, and then when it starts pouring on us all, they'll be like, hey, just wait for the summer.
I like it.
All right. Scott Barnes, I appreciate you. Thank you.
Absolutely. You take care. Have a great day.
There's the athletic director at Oregon State. They're getting the bids, and that's good. And he's right about that level of confidence. I know what the NCAA tournament is looking for there. They're looking for a chaperone that knows what the hell they're doing. And Scott Barnes, being chair of the NCAA tournament selection committee, and somebody that they trust is, all right, he knows what he's doing. We can put the tournament in at Moda Center. But it's big for Portland. It's big for the Oregon Ducks. It's big for the Beavers. It's big for Portland State. It's big for UP. And it's big for sports fans here. I keep saying that this market, as a sports market, you're better looking than you think. You think you just have one major professional sports team. You think you have to drive a little while to see a college football game, unless you're going to a Portland State game. You think, oh, there's no NFL, there's no Major League Baseball. You start to look at yourself and go, am I fat in these jeans? They don't fit me. Do I have lines around my, as a sports fan, do I have lines around my eyes? Look, I'm here to tell you, you're better looking than you think. And the NCAA today sort of went, you could pull that off. So you get the bid. This is good for sports fans running through 2022, but we got to get an all-star game. We need bigger events here. All right, I want you to line up. I've got two Pints for Parkinson's passports. If you haven't seen these, the good people at Bricks Tavern, my favorite go-to restaurant, sports before the game, after the game location. They're in the Pearl District. If you haven't been to Bricks, 13th and Hoyt, and you can get great food, neighborhood stuff, go-to for easy drinking, good times. The door's always swinging. Friends are coming in and out. Large groups, small groups, doesn't matter. This is a great place, okay? Always a reason to hit the Bricks, right? 30 craft beers, 10 TVs, 6 hours of happy hour a day. 2 days of brunch, dartboards, pool table, loft, a lot of stuff going on. But I have two pints for passports. Passports. I guess they're called pint passports. This gets you 10 pints. They're normally sold for $25. I'm going to give away two of them. And you're going to have to call in 417-7575 right now to line up, because we are going to play a game that will give you an advantage if you have owned a hamster. It's a game that we like to call, Is Kiki Heckling at a Sporting Event or Criticizing Her Hamster?
And now, it's a game we here at the Bald-Faced Truth like to call, Criticizing a Hamster or Heckling at a Sporting Event.
So it's a very simple concept. Kiki is going to play the part of the hamster criticizer slash sports fan heckler. You're going to have to determine, is she heckling her hamster or is she heckling at a sporting event? All right? Let's see here. You got to get two in a row to win the pints for Parkinson's passports. And by the way, this supports the Brian Grant Foundation. It's a great event. If you have an opportunity to get out to Brick's Tavern and buy one of these, you get 10 pints for $25. I'm holding the passports in my hot little hands. Mike in North Portland joins us first. Mike, you ready?
Yeah, man, let's do it.
Mike is ready. Kiki's going to... Mike, have you ever owned a hamster?
We had some gerbils when I was growing up, but my mom's not very much of a pet person. Let's just say they didn't last that long.
Yeah, they never do. They never do. Disposable pets. Kiki, you go ahead. You let it rip. And Mike, you're going to have to tell us if she is criticizing her hamster or heckling at a sporting event.
Grab a straw. You suck.
One more time. Can I hear it one more time?
Grab a straw. You suck.
That's a sporting event.
Dang it. Thought he had it.
Oh,
obviously a hamster. Obviously.
Tricky hamster.
All right, let's go to Ellie, who's in Portland. Ellie, welcome.
Hi.
You ever owned a hamster?
Never.
You ever heckled at a sporting event?
Few times.
All right, she might have a shot. Kiki, let it rip.
You better get some tape, because you just got ripped.
Sporting event.
Pretty good. You need one more to get the pints for Parkinson's passports. Kiki, let it rip.
Check the roster. You might be left-handed.
That's pretty good.
Sporting event.
Oh, everybody knows. Wow. Hamster.
That's a tough one.
I think that's an easy one. That's, I thought that was a gimme. When you said it, I was getting ready to put the passports down because I thought she had it. TJ's in Vancouver. TJ, welcome.
Hello.
Thanks for playing.
Absolutely.
Ever heckled at a sporting event?
Many, many times, yes. Mm-hmm.
You ever owned a hamster?
That I have not, no.
Okay. What did you have as pets as a kid?
Dogs and cats.
You ever castrated a swine?
Negative.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday. Grab the podcast if you want to if you want to go on a diet. All right, TJ, TJ in Vancouver, here's Kiki.
If you throw all your peanuts at me, what are you going to feed your mother?
Oh, that's a hamster.
Ooh, well done. Golf clap.
Love
nice
it.
Job.
Love it. All right, one more for the pints for Parkinson's. We're looking at 10 beers. Two of these. That's 20 beers I'm holding in my hands here, TJ. TJ, who are you going to take with you if you win this thing?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Probably one of my buddies.
Okay.
An Uber. Or Lyft.
Yeah, it's Uber probably. All right, Kiki, go ahead.
I've seen better fans at Home Depot.
Oh, that's a sporting event.
Dang!
TJ.
Come on, TJ.
Wow.
So
that's a rough
close one.
That was tough.
Katie's in Camas. Katie, thanks for listening. Appreciate you calling in here.
Okay.
You ever had a hamster?
Yes.
You ever heckled at a sporting event?
Yes.
Is the hamster still alive?
Died many, many years ago.
You ever criticized your hamster?
A few times.
All right.
Who hasn't? I mean, look at you.
I mean, come on.
What are you doing in there? Running in circles? All right. All right. Kiki, let it rip. Needs two straight.
Two in a row.
Two in a row. Somebody win this.
Do you think you'll like this game once you catch on?
Hamster.
Ooh, well done. I took some time on that one.
Did you have the hamster in a cage, or did it have that 2B plastic thing that was like, you know, always running through, you know, where did your hamster live?
Outside in a cage.
Outside? Did it freeze to death?
No, it was in like a carport area.
All right.
With the rabbits.
What was the hamster
name? And I have castrated a cow before.
You have? Oh. Ooh, tell us about it. Tell us about it. What's that like?
It's disgusting.
Yes, thank you.
But you know what? Don't you feel like you know some things because you've been through that?
I feel like I know some things being raised on a farm.
Yeah, you know some things.
I can say that.
You're in the grocery store. You're not looking around like, oh, was this stuff just born in plastic out here in the meat section? You know where it came from, don't you?
Correct.
All right. You need to get this correct to win the Pints for Parkinson's passports. I have two of them from our friends at Brick's Tavern. Kiki, let it rip.
You've got less hits than an Amish website.
One more time.
You've got less hits than an Amish website.
Sports.
Sorry. Oh. Sorry. Oh, so close. Wow. That's a hamster.
Oh,
how do you not know that?
Wow.
Greg is driving on 84. Greg, welcome.
Thank you.
Greg, you ever had a hamster?
I've never had a hamster, John.
Have you heckled?
I have heckled.
All right.
I've been known to heckle.
Heckle at a Little League game?
No, I don't think so.
Kiki, let it rip.
This pitcher is getting lit up more times than a joint at a Fish concert.
This pitcher. I'm going to say sporting event.
All right. By the way, why can't you heckle at a Little League game? What's wrong with that? Hey, bada, swing,
bada.
All right, go ahead.
I've seen more heat in an Easy Bake Oven.
Sporting event.
You got it. All right. You're the winner. You win two passports, the Pints for Parkinson's passports. For those of you who want to buy them, you can buy them at Brick's Tavern and some other locations. But for $25, you get 10 pints, and it benefits the Brian Grant Foundation. Who are you taking with you on this pub crawl?
I'm going to take Kiki Vandeweghe.
Nice.
Wow. All right.
Probably my wife. Yeah. My wife would like to go, I'm sure. So
awesome. I didn't know you're married to Kiki Vandeweghe. How about that? I'll put you on hold. Greg's on 84. He wins the Pikes for Parkinson's. Thanks to Brick's Tavern, and thanks for everyone who played. Leave it right here. Kiki reads the news coming up.
This is the Bald-Faced Truth on 102.9 and 750. The Game.
ReflexKnees.com, that's the website you need to know about. I talked to my brother today. I was on my way down here to the station. He has had PRP, that's platelet-rich plasma therapy from Reflex. And he was saying, I got to get back up there to Portland. Call Dr. Riggs. He says, find out if I can get back in there. And I'm like, you call Dr. Riggs or go to their website, ReflexKnees.com. So he's coming up. And look, you don't have to travel 1,000 miles to do it, to get great service and take care of your knees and get cutting edge technology and treatment modalities. I guess you could. We could fly you down to the Bay Area and you could drive up, but it's right here. It's in our area. I did the research. I looked around. I was like, who's the best? I'm going with the best because why? These are my knees. Why would I jimmy jack around with my own knees? So I went to Reflex. I had stem cell treatment. I had PRP therapy and I feel good. It's a game changer, and not just that, it's a life changer. ReflexKnees.com. All right, on yesterday's show, if you listen to the last half hour of yesterday's show, maybe it grew up a little bit. I asked Gliss yesterday, you know, have you ever eaten one of your pets? I have eaten one of my pets. It was a steer.
Jubilee.
And who names the steer Jubilee? May Jubilee rest in peace. We talked about it on yesterday's show. I walk out of here. And I run into one of the financial guys who lives, who works right upstairs. And he says, my grandfather had a ranch. And he started going into, like, you know, feeding the cattle and feeding the dairy cows and milking a cow and snapping the neck of a rabbit. And yeah, because how are you gonna kill a rabbit if you're going to eat it? You're going to snap its neck, or, you know, they do other things. So,
right.
Huh?
That's the intention, right? Make it quick.
Yeah, make it quick. And also, you don't have to use, you know, you're just using your hands. It's like Lenny
It's just like that. It's exactly like that.
Lenny of a Mice and Men.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Don's in West Lynn. Don, what's on your mind?
Hey, Johnny.
What's up, Donnie?
Johnny, I haven't talked to you for a while.
I know. What happened?
Hey, just taking a break.
Yeah, you get locked up or something?
There's a story of Jubilee before, and that's when your sister stopped eating meat. And,
yep.
But that taught you a lot about hard work.
I don't know if it was hard work as much as it was, you got to see some things, Donnie. You got to see some things. You got to get out a little bit.
Get your hands dirty.
Oh, I live on a ranch.
Okay. So you've seen some things.
Up in the hills.
You've seen some things. So what's on your mind? Why'd you call? You didn't call here to talk about livestock. What'd you call for?
No, I want to talk to Johnny because I haven't talked to Johnny, my good buddy, for a long time.
All right.
I just wanted to say hi and wish well and hope you had a great Easter with your family.
You too, man. Take care of yourself. I'm glad you called. I'm glad you're not locked up.
No.
I always worry about the regular.
What happens to people like, you know, they call frequently and then all of a sudden it's crickets?
They get busy or they get locked up. I have a list here of everybody who's a regular caller in the show. And by the way, if you're a regular caller in the show and I go down the list and I'm like, Dre hasn't called in a while. What happened to
that?
Dre? And then I run into Dre in the grocery store. He's like, I've just been busy.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm like, all right.
So that's reassuring.
Yeah, it's okay. I like to know you're okay.
That's right. Check in from time to time.
The mother hen in me wants to know that everybody's okay. All right. Kiki's, you're going to read the news.
I am.
Ladies and gentlemen,
stand by for news.
This is Kiki Reads the News on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Kiki's reading news.
I'm reading news. Listen up, hipsters. Now is your chance for your close-up, or, well, maybe just a quick glimpse as a TV extra. A new HBO drama will be filmed right here in Portland. And a news release from Cast Iron Studio says they are looking for general background performers, experienced stand-ins, photo doubles, and Portland hipster types. So if you fit that category, you can go onto the Cast Iron website for more information in terms of your application to be an extra. But that's kind of a cool thing. The show's going to star Holly Hunter and Tim Robbins. So that's some pretty exciting stuff. Have you ever been an extra, John?
I was just looking up the movie that I was an extra for.
Okay.
Because I was trying to figure out the name of the movie.
While you do that, I was an extra when I was a freshman in college at Loyola University of Chicago. Mm. And my roommate, who was a drama major from St. Louis, comes busting into our dorm room. She says, you want to be an extra in a movie? I was like, sure. She says, do you have a photo? And I'm like, yeah. So we went down to this casting place in Chicago. It was kind of a scary area, by the way. And it got a little awkward because I was picked and she wasn't.
Uh-oh.
I know.
What kind of movie was it?
It was Flatliners with Julia Roberts.
Oh, yeah.
And I was in two scenes with Julia Roberts. This is a true story. And I got edited out both scenes. I was crushed. It was soul crushing.
I was in Magic Mike.
That's not Dirk Diggler. Which one's Dirk Diggler? That's the other one. No, you weren't.
Deuce Bigelow?
Yes.
Yeah, she butchered that one. Mouthful of marbles on that one.
Sorry about that.
I wasn't in Magic Mike, just to clear that up. I was in another movie, and I can't remember the name of the movie. But I was at the John Wayne Airport. I had just flown in, and some guy grabbed me as I was headed to baggage claim. And he was like, hey, would you mind standing in here, you know, if you're not in a hurry? Mm-hmm. It was Steve Martin and Whoopi Goldberg, I think, that were in the movie. And I don't know if the movie ever got made.
Is that the one where she's a nun?
I don't know, because all I was in was the scene at the baggage claim.
Okay.
And all I had to do was stand there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they shot. And then they later told me I needed to join the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what do you mean? What does that cost? I was like, this is some kind of scam. Like, hey, you could be a model.
Yeah.
Let us do a portfolio of you.
Yeah.
You
and know? Then, yeah, for $1,500, we'll do this. But I actually still have the paperwork from that. And I think for the entire day, which back in college, where this is like, you know, 89, 90, yeah. I got $85. But it was an all-day thing. And in fact, it was pretty cool because Mystic Pizza had been shot, but it had not been released. So nobody yeah. really knew who Julia Roberts was. And that's when she was dating, what's his name from, oh God, the short little guy from 24. What's his name? Help me
Kiefer
out
Sutherland.
Thank you. She was dating him at the time.
Short little guy.
That Cheddar Bob. So actually, it was pretty interesting to watch them off screen. And boy, I wish I could go back that day because knowing what I know now and who they became. And because yeah. at the time, no one knew who she was.
You would have got some selfies if cell phones existed.
I absolutely would have. But I had a scene with her. It was actually kind of cool. I was walking into what was supposed to be their little lab because the movie was Flatliners. And so I opened the door and then Julia Roberts walks through and then I walk behind her. It was very exciting. And then in another scene, we're walking yeah. through the quad.
Did you do a little acting there? Do you have any lines?
I had a line. My line was, hello. I did. I had one. And I got to, Joel Schumacher was the director. This is not a joke. This is a big deal. Of like all the students that got picked, and for some random reason, Joel Schumacher, the director, picked me. And he said, you, come over here. And yeah. I want you to walk. And in the middle, you say hello to this woman.
Were you
I'm like,
good
right.
in this movie?
No, I was edited out.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, it's been 27 years. You never had a follow-up role.
No, I was in a CBS made, one of those Hallmark CBS.
You did an episode, too, of another TV
yes,
show.
Yes, I did.
What was that, a dating show?
No, HGTV.
You get a lot of airtime.
Hey, man, I've got a lot of... I've seen some things. I've seen some things,
I
John.
I don't know, man. You never castrated one of
no,
I have an
not.
Animal.
No, I have not, but...
Never ate one of your pets.
Talk so far,
to me. Get back to me when you eat one of your pets.
So far, I have not done that, and I think my streak is pretty safe.
Gliss may have eaten one of his pets. Canary? Something? Rabbit?
I've not eaten any pets.
You
now.
Haven't been hungry enough
See?
Yet.
See?
All right.
Thank goodness. And in other news, move over Elsa. A Missouri girl raised some eyebrows recently over the theme of her birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
No, as you know, right? The
yeah.
little one, the themes of the birthday parties. This yeah. is a lot of pressure, right?
Yeah, we're doing a
princess.
We're doing one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You want to know what this little girl wanted the theme of her birthday party to be?
Yeah, I want to know.
Poop. A poop.
No.
Poop. No, this is great. This is great. So she wore a little white dress with a poop emoji on her. And her poopy party included a little girl dressed up in her poop dress, a poop-shaped pinata filled with Tootsie Rolls and Hershey Kisses.
I'd be afraid to hit that pinata.
And wait for it, a pin the poop on the toilet game. So bravo to this little girl. Her parents went all out, man.
Crappy party.
It was a crappy party. But I thought it was great. I love this little girl. I'm going to keep my eye on her. I'm going to keep my eye on her, and I'm going to keep my eye on the eighth-year-old boy who drove to McDonald's.
One day,
the drive-through.
She becomes the porta potty queen. She owns a porta potty business, and her parents say, "You know, we thought that this is the direction she would go
mm-hmm.
as a young child. What's yeah. wrong with a princess party? Come on, get Ariel over there. Find somebody
Elsa.
To dress up as Ariel, Elsa."
That's say happened. Ariel
That's
again.
Ariel.
Ariel.
It's happening at our house.
I know.
This summer, we were having an Ariel party at our house. And the two-year-old would like an appearance by Ariel. So if you're a redhead with a mermaid costume, I'm looking for you.
Tweet at John, for sure.
I'm looking for you.
Yeah, it's just interesting to me how the evolution of birthday parties and the takeaway bags and all the stuff
oh, yeah,
anymore.
It's a big
like,
deal.
That's hardcore.
You got to get Jay-Z to sing and all that.
That's
you know,
a lot
it's
of
a big
pressure.
Thing.
A lot of pressure.
You know what happened? You know what happened?
What?
It's television. It's reality television
mm-hmm.
happened because you started watching like the Housewives of Beverly Hills and stuff and the parties they throw for their kids. And then all the moms were like, whatever. And then Pinterest happened.
Yes.
And everybody was like, oh, we have to do this. We have to have the Angry Birds cake. And we have to do. I, for the 14-year-old, I drove out to like some rural Oregon city to get, not Oregon City, but some rural city in Oregon.
Right.
To get cake toppers that were Angry Birds when she was like 8.
Yeah.
The links that you go to for your kids, though. That's awesome.
Pinterest did that.
Yeah, Pinterest kind of puts you up against the wall.
Screw Pinterest. I don't have a Pinterest account.
So you're not interested in having a poop party?
No.
She liked the emojis, apparently, so she went all out with the poop party.
That's a kid who needs...
And also in disgusting news, I thought this was interesting, and former White Sox shortstop Alexi Ramirez had a pregame ritual. So he had this weird diet. He used to take two Krispy Kreme donuts, put something in the middle, a little substance. What would you put in between two donuts if you were gonna?
My hands.
Mayonnaise.
Oh.
Mayonnaise.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's probably why he's a free agent now. But anyway, I thought that was pretty disgusting. And other news too. There's a disturbing story out of the Bay Area. Totally shifting gears here, but officials are cracking down on drones in the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary because the marine mammals there, when they have babies, the seal pups, the mothers are getting freaked out from the buzzing of the drones that are, you know, above their head.
I see.
And so it's scaring them and it's causing them to abandon their seal pups. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So if you have a drone down there, stop doing that. So
did I ever tell you about the helicopter I got one Christmas?
No.
So it was a couple years ago. I never had a remote control helicopter. I wanted one.
I had a car.
I got one for Christmas.
Nice.
I took it out to the park Christmas Day. Okay. It's a nice sized helicopter. You ever had a helicopter, Curtis Rogers?
Never have.
You need every guy needs a remote control helicopter. One time.
Okay.
Not a drone, but maybe just a helicopter.
Mm-hmm. I'm afraid if I do buy it, I will crash it within like 10 minutes.
And I think this
down,
might
like,
be where the story is headed.
Like $100
I'm just spitballing here.
I'm
but
not
I think...
talking about the one you get at Radio Shack either that's like just flies around the store. I'm talking about this is an outdoor helicopter. This was a bad helicopter, okay? So I took the 14-year-old, who was probably like 12 then. We went out to the park together, just her and I.
Okay.
I set that helicopter on the ground. I could not believe how fast and how high it went up into the sky. And then I watched as the wind caught it. It was probably a couple hundred feet above the ground. The wind took it, and then it started drifting and kept drifting.
And you're now, and, do you have the control?
Yeah,
and you're trying to get it back?
But at some point, it gets out of range of the controls. And now it's Mother Nature's like, you know what? I wanted a helicopter too.
Yeah.
And that helicopter took off. I never saw it again. I flew it straight up, and then it just went.
Wow.
I know. And I
crashing.
Ran.
That's going to be a really awkward ride home.
The 12-year-old was laughing so hard because I ran full blast trying to go, oh, I got to get it.
Yeah.
And I realized like how high it was and how far it was. It was like watching a balloon disappear.
The
like
jet
a helium
stream got
balloon.
It. Oh, that's funny.
And then it went. And somebody, I imagine some guy was like in his backyard on Christmas morning, maybe quarter mile from that park. And he was like, man, I didn't get a helicopter for Christmas. And all of a sudden, out of the sky, there appears my helicopter and lands into his yard.
Now, is that like battery operated? What did it run on?
You had to charge it. You had to charge it. Man, it was, I didn't ask how much it cost. I just went home and the 12-year-old went, well, how did it go? And she goes, well, it went really high.
It's still going.
That was it.
Oh.
If you found a helicopter, it might be mine.
Oh, that's pretty funny. And one other quick little odd thing this morning. Oprah Winfrey was leaving the CBS studios in New York City. And there were some fans outside waiting for her. And they wanted her to sign a few things. And apparently two of the people waiting got into a scuffle, which resulted in one of the guys falling back and breaking some glass, which obviously then made a big, loud noise. And boy, oh boy, the security guards around Oprah got around her like, you know what, and whisked her away to her car. But there's a quick video, and it shows kind of this strange look on her face, kind of just a scary moment. And you can see sort of how quickly she wanted to get the heck out of Dodge. But that was kind of an odd moment this
morning.
She's
going to be president.
I hope so. That'd be kind of fun.
Oprah's going to be president. She'll follow Trump as president.
Okay, you heard it here today.
Guaranteed.
April 2017.
If he could be president, Oprah could be president.
Well, she said that in an interview not too long ago.
She's going to be president.
She said
Yeah.
Remember, they offered her a role in 60 Minutes. She turned it down. You know why? Because she's gaming to be president. She doesn't need 60 Minutes.
She's on a yacht somewhere with Obama right now.
There you go. She's going to be president. She is. Guaranteed.
You heard it here.
All right, leave it here. The irregular guys, they're next.